Welcome to In Your Head Podcast. I am your host, psychic medium Chris Medina. Join me as I journey through life as a psychic to discuss spirituality and all things metaphysical without the love and light gimmicks. Real talk for real people. Let's get into it. Welcome back to another fabulous episode of In Your Head with yours truly, Chris Medina. I have a very special guest for you today. My guest is a film director for over 20 years. He has worked with some of the biggest names in the industry and has a movie about to drop this coming September. I can't get over his extensive resume. It's just absolutely amazing. I would like to welcome film director extraordinaire Elliot Lester. Welcome, Elliot.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm not sure I can follow that up with anything as inspiring, but I'll do my best.
Before we get into this fabulous film you're about to drop and your background, I want to talk about how we first met. Is that okay with you?
Of course.
So yeah, I had the pleasure of reading your now beautiful wife, Brooke. That led to a very fantastic, life-changing opportunity, which was to be the psychic at your wedding last June.
That's the truth.
It started off as a session, and then it blossomed into a beautiful friendship. And then I had the pleasure of meeting you as well. We did not get to meet face-to-face until the wedding. You were all in your tux. I mean, Brooke looked so beautiful. There were so many different people there. I mean, I was just in shock. I mean, if you will, I just want to name drop a couple names. Adriana Lima, Kelly Osborne, Leslie Grace, all under one roof at your wedding.
Charles Gambino.
Oh my God. I didn't get to see him. But remember, I had to work that event. As much as I wanted to pop my head out of the tent and look at everybody going on, I had that line backed up with sessions. It was just a beautiful, amazing time. Brooke really went all out on my tent. I could not thank her enough. But that is how we met. I read your wife, led to a friendship, had the opportunity to meet you, do your wedding, and then I got to spend time with you in New York.
I mean, look, can I just take it back to your original point about Brooke? She, you know, we met with a bunch of different psychics because Brooke had this vision that she wanted to have someone there. She came back from meeting you, having a session with you, and she's utterly blown away, not just because of the way you gave your reading, but also sort of your superhumanistic approach. You know, she came back and she was like, you know, he's not only a savant and sort of incredibly professional, but there's something that's sort of very penetrative in his soul. And I think for her, that's really important. And of course, I wanted to be supportive of her. I will say that when you came to the wedding, you know, made a huge difference to people. You know, you have this incredible gift, which obviously we should get into and discuss, but you really affected people. I think that's, you know, if your listeners know anything about you, then they'll know that you know how to reach people and touch people. So it's only a privilege and honor.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Like I said, I mean, what a great time, especially in my life. I do so many readings with so many different people, and you know, I'm usually the source of inspiration, and you know, in helping them with their lives and helping them to change it and all that stuff. And just, you know, having you and Brooke as now friends, I'd like to call you guys friends. I mean, you've been so inspiring. I'm going to definitely get into all the stuff that I've learned from you directly later on in this interview. So I want to go into this film that's getting ready to drop, The Thicket, with Juliette Lewis, Andrew Schultz, Leslie Grace, Peter Dinklage, and also Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke's kid. I cannot believe it. That's how old I am that now their kids are starting to act. Tell me about this.
Well, I mean, you know, the movie has been the brainchild of Peter Dinklage for about 11 years. It was based on a novel by Joe R. Lansdale of the same name. I came onto it a few years ago. You know, these movies are a marathon. They you know, invariably, they can take years and years and years, you know. And the irony being that when you see something on Netflix and you click it on and watch it, you don't see all the pain and the anguish and the work that's really got into that thing being delivered into your home or into a movie theater. I came onto it. I immediately fell in love with the material. I wanted to change some things. One of the things that is significant is I changed the villain from being a man to a woman. And I did that for a couple of reasons. One, because I felt that the tenets of the character were interesting enough that it could handle it. And also because I wanted to sort of make the film feel a little bit more contemporary. You know, we set off on this journey sort of pre-COVID. We went to Spain initially, and my father was dying, and my father loved the script. And he made me make him a promise. He said, whatever you do, promise me you'll make this movie. And of course, I wanted to honor that. We went to Spain. We flew back from Spain. My father died a couple of days later in my arms. And then COVID happened and the world shut down. My brother and I were in London. We buried our father, took care of our mother. And a week later, after burying him, Trump said all the Americans have to come back. So we had to jump on a plane, fly into Los Angeles. We were met by the CDC in their sort of white masks and stuff. And that was it. So what happened was the movie went to sleep. The world went to sleep and so did the film business. I stuck with it and stuck with it and stuck with it. And then fortunately, this really wonderful group of people at Tubi, you know, who are this new sort of very exciting platform, they wanted to do a theatrical release. They wanted a movie that was going to go into the cinemas. So we set about by putting it together. And then it really, really moved. Then we changed the location. We decided, let's do a wintry feel. Let's go to Calgary. I had some really good friends in Calgary who helped put the movie together on the financial and production side. And then we were off to the races. I mean, Peter came out. Peter is, first and foremost, now a friend. And he is a remarkable producer. I mean, he and I were on the phone every day. We were texting every day. Everything was an idea. Every idea was embraced. You know, we would work out issues together. And then we're lucky enough to get going on the film.
With COVID and having to be shut down, I read a lot of people that are in your industry, and it scared the shit out of people when everything shut down. So it's amazing to hear you say that, yes, everything was shut down. You had the tragedy of your father passing away during this time. But to be where you're at now, and to have this release after literally, let's be truthful here, the blood, sweat, and tears that you put into this.
Many people put their blood, sweat, and tears into it. Look, of course it feels good. It feels good to come together, you know, to close that chapter. And, you know, it's very important that you sort of relish in the fact that you're able to do it. But then once you've done that, you've also got to keep an eye on what's coming next. How are you going to continue the narrative? How are you not going to rest on your laurels? Our lives are perpetual motion. And in perpetual motion, sometimes we forget how well we're actually doing, you know, how grateful we should be. And, you know, I think sometimes when you live in gratitude, as I am with this film, you know, you get to actually look around and go, okay, this has been brilliant. And the next thing's going to be even better, you know. And better doesn't mean you're going to make another movie, but better doesn't mean you're going to get older. You've got a little bit more wisdom.
You've been in this industry for over 20 years. You've seen a lot. I've had the pleasure of picking your brain when I was in New York with you and hearing some of these great stories regarding actors and even musicians. You've worked on a lot of music videos.
500. I've worked on 500 music videos. And, you know, just to color it a little bit more, I've actually been in the business 35 years.
I'm just going to be a little bit gay here. He's a very good looking man. I mean, you would never think 35 years in the business, but I want to touch on that. You had said that, you know, all the stuff, all your experience, everything that led you up until this point. I know times have changed, things have gotten different, the world continues to move on. There's a lot of changes in technology and the way that we look at things. How is your career different in 2024 than it was when you first started?
Well, I have one.
Yeah.
I have a career. You know, I have a career, and I don't think it's good to look back, but if I was going to look back and look back at it like a piece of string, I could then chart everything that had happened to me that led up to this point. You know, when I started in the business, you know, as a child, and I was very impatient. And during your early years in your 20s, you should be impatient. In your 30s, you're formulating what you want to do. You know, you're becoming the thing. And in your 40s, there's an arrival. You need to be doing what you want by the time you're 40, because the time you turn 50, the world looks at you in a different way. And it's time for the people that are behind you, the next generation, to come through with their point of view. So it becomes a question of a revolution, you know. and sort of a little bit of acceptance. The business has never been easy. It doesn't matter any era, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. You're in a creative field, and in a creative field is highly, highly risky. You know, it's also a business, you know. These things don't exist not to make money.
To have the success that you've had over the last 35 years and where you're at right now. I mean, like, as I stated before, I read so many people in your industry that are, you know, what's going to happen? You know, they really let the times and, you know, the issue that we had with COVID, you know, studios being shut down, the walkouts, the strikes and all that stuff. Is this ever going to change? And people start to get desperate, you know, and want to, you know, react and you know, do desperate things at desperate times during this time. How did you feel about that? I know you were on my podcast and I talk about spirituality and the metaphysical side of things. Your belief system in yourself and the higher power that you believe in, did you intuitively know that you would need to stick this out?
Well, you don't, there's this thing, right? That happens. It's acceptance. That doesn't mean that you can't be ambitious. That doesn't mean that you can't be forthright and ask for what you want. But there has to be a certain level of acceptance. Like, I know where I am right now. And being where I am right now doesn't mean I'm going to be in the same place in an hour, 2 hours. You know, I think there's a tendency to catastrophize. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason we catastrophize is because we're allowing the chatter, the outside voices, to constantly bring us down and bring what we don't have, what we don't have. I mean, that's a system that we live in. You know, you need more, you need more. I think it's really important to slow things down just when you are feeling anxious and just take a minute. I do a thing every day. I do an affirmation, you know, where I wake up in the morning. Obviously, I'm crazy about my wife and my kid, and I'm grateful for that. But I take great pleasure in very small things. Like, I'll get up and I'll have a cup of tea and I'll sit on the roof and I'll watch the sun come up, and these are just lovely moments, and that sort of sets you up in the right way for the day. I also think that there's a certain thing, like, if you are going towards a goal, you should wake up every day and try and do two or three things towards that goal, and then at least you know you've done that. You can't control COVID. You can't control the world shutting down. You can't. What you can do, you know, like in prison, and to a certain degree, we were in a little bit of a prison.
Right.
We were under lockdown in Los Angeles and a curfew. There's something called doing hard time. And in prison, when you're doing hard time, that just means you're waking up every day going, oh my God, I've got nothing to do. I've got nothing to do. I've got nothing to do. Well, you know, that's a choice. You know, and I think during COVID, a lot of people had a chance to grow, a lot of time for self-reflection, and that's difficult. I mean, how many people actually get a chance to sort of sit still? We're distracted all the time. We can't sit with feelings.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because during COVID, while everything was shutting down, I could not have been busier. People are running around, the fate of the world, you know, what's going to happen? How much longer are we going to be locked down? What do you see coming into play? And I would tell people, out of all the shit that you talk on a daily basis about, there's not enough hours in the day to do me. I work a 9-to-5. I got to come home. I got to feed my kids. Then I got to do things for myself. There's not enough hours in the day to do stuff. And then when the world shuts down, people forget that mentality prior to it going down, you know, about not having that time. And now that they have the time on their hands, It's blaring loud. They don't know what to do with themselves. They're freaking out instead of using that time wisely. So as I stated, with COVID coming into play in my business, it was a lot of healing. It was a lot of self-reflection, but a lot of what are we doing with the time that we have on our hands now? How can we be productive? And how can we, you, like you said, you can't stop the world from spinning, tragedies and or events. It's what you choose to do with yourself to get through it.
Let's go back to some of the points you were making earlier about people needing you and you've never been busier. So there's a couple of things that you offer, which I think people during that time needed. Obviously, they need the reassurance. You know, they also, there's this effect of not being able to control what's happening. The other thing is, you know, your skill is that you're immensely soothing and you're very understanding and you have this lovely patience about you. And obviously, you have a certain level of prescience and you understand sort of predetermination. And I think that speaks to how people feel about you when they're talking to you. Obviously, my interactions with you have been remarkable. You know, you as on a friendship level, you know, we banter, we have a great time, but on a sort of, on a more psychic sort of reading level, what you're able to do is you sort of frame things in a way where there's a reality. It's like, well, look, this is how it's feeling and this is how it could go. And this is what I'm getting. And you're very good at like interpreting mm-hmm. your downloads and really, really fantastic at sort of mapping out the charts. I mean, I'm sure your listeners know your attention to detail and your attention to being attentive is second to none.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much for that. You came at a very special time in my life. Prior to going to visit you, my guides had came in and started restructuring my life and putting these lessons into play, telling me that you've gotten too comfortable where you're at. It's time to move up and level up. And so I immediately jumped on that trip with you. I was like, okay, let's see where this is going to take me. And you had mentioned something to me prior to me even going out there. You had said, Chris, you're going to have an amazing time in New York, and you're also going to meet somebody very amazing that's going to change your life. You're on the phone the whole time that I'm there to hear some of the stuff that you were saying in your hustle and your game and your determination and your confidence and being professional. I mean, you started when the sun came up and stopped when the sun went down. I needed that type of energy around me. I needed to be reminded of, again, you've gotten too comfortable, and you are somebody that does not sugarcoat. And I think one of the reasons why we get along so well is we can be very direct, very honest, and straight up with each other. And you basically told me, get up off your ass and start making things happen. If you want this, you got to go for it. And the thing that I took away from that visit was not just inspiration and hope, but being heard on a one-on-one level. That's very rare in my profession, to be able to have a conversation with somebody that motivates me when it's the other way around.
Well, I think, and obviously getting to know you and seeing your ability, and sometimes it's very hard to see ourselves in the light that other people us, you know, and you're remarkably egoless. And, you know, you spend your career pep talking, you know, listening to your guides, giving guidance, and obviously foretelling other people's lives. So for me, when I was looking at you, it was like, okay, you've achieved this, but there's, you know, this is only part of the Chris Medina story and only part of the journey. You're a young guy, and I would, in either your misery or in your success, it's just because it's fleeting. These moments are fleeting. And for you, you know, look, you're on this wonderful journey. You may fail, you may not, you probably won't. But as long as you're feeling that you're moving up a level, look, when I get advice from people, there are two sets of people I get advice from. Very, very young people who are in their 20s, and then the very, very old people who've achieved a certain level of stature in the business. And why I do that is why I move between the two, because there's valuable lessons. You know, the older people, they've maybe a little more cynicism, they have a lot more wisdom. And in the younger side, there's ambition, there's future, there's hope. The time is much more protracted for them. You know, and for you, I felt that you just needed a little bit of advice, certainly a push.
I can't thank you enough. You're just an amazing person. I want to get right back on track here. Tell me more about the stars of the movie, how that all worked out.
Let's address Juliet. So Juliet is an icon, right? And Juliet has a way about her. She has a certain energy about her. She is very much alive. But more than that, she's a true artist that's committed. She's totally committed. So actually, it was Brooke's idea to talk to her. And then I gave her manager the script. And within 5 days, I was on a Zoom with Juliet. And we were discussing the role. And I was like, wow, you're sort of like a David Bowie kind of alive musician. And she's, you know, mm-hmm. she is a musician as well. And I just wanted to channel her, to channel that energy. I gave her little bits of ideas, you know, and then it became a matter of Juliet finding the voice for Cutthroat Bill, which is how most good actors will do it. They'll find the voice, they'll build the identity. And then I just let her go. I would obviously, look, when you're working with a great artist, they do mm-hmm. the job for you. And directing isn't acting lessons. Directing is guiding.
Yeah.
You're the coach. And you want to keep the character or the performer within their lane, that they're, you know, keep them left, keep them right, keep them center. And with Juliet, she embraced the role completely. I think it was a very personal role for her, because her father, Jeffrey Lewis, was a very, very well-known character actor. He'd done a movie with Clint Eastwood called High Plains Drifter, and he played a villain in that. And obviously this is a twisted Western. So for her, it was like history coming full circle. She's a very, very hardworking mm-hmm. actor. She's been an amazing supporter of the film. She's an incredible human being. And going back to your earlier point, you know, you can't deny the body of work, Natural Born Killers, Strange Days, California, Cape Fear. I mean, this is a girl who, like, at 16 years old, 15 years old, was doing scenes with Robert De Niro that were of a very, very difficult nature. And she was able to sort of, like, you know, embody that innocence. She was a gift, as were a lot of the actors. You know, I was lucky enough to work, as you said, Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's kid, LaVon. LaVon had been acting for 6 months.
6 months prior to doing The Thicket?
Yeah, he'd done a couple of things. But what was remarkable about LaVon was his, younger actors don't tend to have any habits, not bad habits. Some actors have bad habits. He had no bad habits. He was wide open. With him, you know, you have to treat each actor differently. You know, the paintbrushes, you know, I don't treat Juliet the same way I treat Peter, treating LaVon. There was a nice innocence about him, and we could really build the character. Same for Esme Creed-Miles. Esme Creed-Miles is a British actress. She's the daughter of Samantha Morton, who's pound for pound one of the best actors in the world. But she was different. She knew the role, got into it. It was a super experienced actress as well. And, you know, with her, it was just quick adjustments. The one man that really surprised me was James Hetfield from Metallica, who came to me in a dream. You know, I woke up, I called Peter, I said, we have to have James Hetfield in the movie. And Peter was like, that's a great idea, but he's a lead singer of Metallica. So we tried to get hold of him through all these different ways. And then finally, Peter had a friend called Sassy Gervais, who'd done a movie called Anvil, and he called James Hetfield. And within a week or so, we were talking to James Hetfield about coming in and playing a part. And it was kind of amazing. You know, this guy is arguably one of the great rock gods, you know, still alive. He's the phenomenal Metallica. And he came in and he was super, super humble. He sort of gave himself to me in a way of like, just tell me how you want me to do it. Tell me, you know, and he was open for guidance, and there was a vulnerability mm-hmm. about him that I really appreciated. And the crew loved him. I got lucky with the actors. And the other thing is, because it was so cold, it's -35 degrees. They were the ones who were suffering more than anyone else on set. Like, it's very easy to sort of poo-poo actors and go, oh, you know, it's really easy what they do. And they're like, it actually isn't when you're standing there in -35 degrees in period costume, and everyone else around you is bundled up and they're warm, and their discomfort is what you see in the film.
That's amazing. And just to back up here, because again, we are on In Your Head podcast, which is spirituality and metaphysical. James Hetfield came to you in a dream. Tell me about that, if you can.
Yeah. So I'd gone to bed at night and I was racking my head about who could play this character of Simon Deasy, who plays a US Marshal. Who could it be? And oftentimes when I want to solve a problem, I'll ask the problem and I'll sleep on it, I'll dream on it. And then in the morning, usually I have the answer. This just came roaring into me, came roaring into focus. And I felt like, you know, it was sort of like he was heaven sent, you know, and it was meant to be. There was a certain amount of, it was fortuitous, you know. And there is a connection to asking the universe what you want, and then not expecting it, but being led to it. You know, I think oftentimes, you were saying earlier that people you know, have a hard time, or they're negative, or things. I think sometimes if you try the opposite approach and you sort of will something into existence, you know, then it can happen. I did a movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger a while ago, and I found him to be quite inspiring in terms of guidance. Now, I can't necessarily say it's a spiritual mm-hmm. thing for him. It certainly felt like that, and he would say, you know, you must have a vision. And he had this refrigerator, and on his refrigerator, he would have little cutouts of things that he was aspiring to. And he said that he had done this his whole life, and he would force him to focus in on what he wanted, and it allowed him to turn down the negativity. And there was a little bit of that, I think. I took on some of that approach. You know, visualization, building out mood boards, writing things down, not necessarily journaling, but just I would start the year with a list of things that I wanted and a list of things that I was going to change. And then by the end of that year, I would look and how many if I'd achieved more than half, then that's huge. But I think it's very, very important to sort of like, list things that you want, list things that you want to let go of.
I like that concept, and I like that idea, and that's some of the things that I explained to my clients during their sessions. But you'd be very surprised how many times people put things out to the universe but don't pay attention to the response back. Does that make sense? When people are asking for signs or symbols, or they're asking the universe for help, they're expecting these big blaring neon signs saying, go in this direction. And they don't pay attention to their own intuition or are present enough to see the actual lesson come into play. And with you talking about, you know, having this dream and, you know, paying attention to it and starting your day off with intention, almost like a boomerang, you're throwing that out there and you're ready to catch that message coming back. You're one of the few people that pay attention to that stuff and can stay focused like that. And that's something that I always remind my clients. You learned how to tie your shoe on your own. You learned how to walk and chew gum at the same time. You learned how to read and write. What makes you as an adult now in your 20s, 30s, 40s that you're not, that you don't think that you have it in you to succeed or bring these things into fruition? You did it before. It's about being focused.
Well, there's something else that I think you touched on slightly earlier, which is, look, if I had woken up and said, I'm going to make the film, and then 2 days later I was making the film, it wouldn't have been as satisfying. By virtue of the fact that sometimes you struggle and that you have the ability to go on, I think can be sort of that much more worthwhile. I mean, obviously, we're living in a time where there's just instant gratification, or there's a sort of acceleration of instant gratification. And because of the immediacy of that, there's an expectation. So for some of your clients, the idea that they have to wait is really hard. I mean, you know, revelations don't come in booms. They come in the little whispers, you know, and the whispers get louder and louder until they're deafening. You know, it's like, you know, you're in a relationship with yourself. It should become a question of how you interpret what you're seeing. It's easy to look at things negatively when around us, like I said earlier, the chatter is negative usually. What you don't have, what's going wrong. I mean, you woke up today, you didn't explode. You probably had a nice moment. You know, you probably did something gentle. You know, you might have a little bit of a bump today. Someone might irk you, but I can guarantee by tomorrow morning, you'll feel completely differently. And I think that it's important to take solace in the fact that, you know, no 2 days are ever going to be the same. So why waste it being unhappy?
Exactly. We touched, I don't want to give too much away because it's a lot of personal conversation that we had, but we talked about your struggles and some of the things that you've seen in the industry and things that you've gone through in life. And we had spoke about the fact that, I mean, to say that you know, that was karmic or whatever the case may be here, somebody like you, in your determination, in your drive, and just that strong soul that you have, yeah, you went through those hard times, but you look at those as lessons, and it kind of smooths out some of those rough spots of experience. Does that make sense? As who you are as a person.
Yeah, it does. Well, I think what you do is you're building up your armor, you know, building up your ammunition, you know, like, only, it's only through experience. Look, you have to have contrast in life. It's just the fact. You can't sort of, you know, wake up every day and trees don't grow to the sky, do they? So you have to have you have to experience all sides of it. And I know that sounds very obvious and a touch trite, but if you are aware of that and you use that in as an application, things become a bit more easier. I mean, I'm using this word acceptance a lot. It's very, very important. You know, it allows you to sort of subordinate yourself.
We're very similar in what we do as far as like having so many different people around us and different personalities. And what makes, again, correct me if I'm wrong, what makes a great director is somebody that can be very perceptive about the person sitting in front of them. So what, I'm not going to go so far as to call you a psychic medium, but to interview people for films and to have those one-on-ones with them. I mean, I just want to touch on a conversation that we had at the Soho House for dinner that one night. And you were asking me about my background and you said, what led you to this and how were you raised? And I told you some of the trauma that I went through and that I left home at a very young age. And you had said to me, and I'd never heard this before, out of all the years of doing this, you had said, wow, you really, what did you say? You said you took yourself back to the age of 15 years old. You spoke as if you were that age again, like you were reliving it. When you're talking to people and you're directing them in a film and getting them involved in it, how much of that side of you is involved with the process?
Well, you're all in, you know, like, you know, a director is like a tennis player or a boxer. You have your own sort of approach and your own sort of uniqueness. I think if you're saying, do I have to read people? Do I have to be in tune with them? Much more so on a movie set than in my own life, because on a movie set, it's time pressure. It's, you don't have the luxury not to sort of know what people need. You know, you've got to, yes, be a boss, but you also have to be a human being. And sometimes people need things that ordinarily you wouldn't even think on. So if you are paying attention to the people in front of you, paying attention to the actor, you know, because fortunately, most actors have an unbelievable sort of emotional sense, much more than people we meet every day. So as a director, you have to tune into that. You have to zero into that and know how to get the best out of people. You know, people don't think about this, or maybe they don't. Acting is incredibly difficult. You are standing on a set and you have to imagine you're in 1908. Yeah. When if you look out from that set, you're seeing 2024. It takes a certain skill set to do that. And as a director, you have to be understanding of that. You mustn't mess with actors' heads. There are some people that think you need to fuck them up or play with them or manipulate them. In fact, you should do the opposite. You should make them feel comfortable, and that way they'll give the best performance. I also believe that in life, if you're fucking with people's heads, you know, you won't get the best out of them. You won't. People need to feel comfortable, relax, the ability to be able to communicate. That's probably what you do so well.
Yeah. It, you know, you're talking about the actors, and I've been on set a couple of times, and to see, it's kind of like, you know, when I go into sessions and I'm having to do these one-on-one sessions with people face to face, I always tell them, don't be worried if I look off to the other side, because, and I think I've told you that in person too, because I don't know what I look like when I'm giving readings, and people tell me your eyes look glazed over. You can tell that you're somewhere else. And when I go and see these actors and I see them on films and I see them doing, you know, doing what they do for a living, they take themselves into that zone. And you're absolutely right. Don't mess with that process. Let's see what you bring. And if you need the occasional guidance, then I'll jump in. But there's nothing like letting somebody talk and feel free and do what they need to do.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, you know, when you're doing your work, can you imagine your clients turning around and telling you how to do your job? No, Chris, you're not doing it this way. I need you to do it this way. I need you to tell me this. I need, you know, it would be, you'd go, listen, this isn't going to work. It's the same in, look, there's a, this is all about applications of mm-hmm. good habits.
Yeah.
I can't always do that myself, Chris. That's the other thing. Being a human being, you also have to be slightly forgiving of your actions. You have to be forgiving of some of your behaviors. You know, there's no sort of, what's that phrase? Practice, not perfection, you know?
I got to put this out there. I'm gonna be very ego right now. I have my ticket for the premiere of The Thicket next week. I'm excited to go and see this. I know we're not anywhere near the completion of this. We got to wait for everything to come into fruition, all that great stuff. But you are Elliot Lester. What is next on the horizon for you?
Well, I get a lot of offers. I get a lot of scripts. Usually I'm trying to control the environment I'm in, and I've got 12 different projects and I'm trying to push them forward. But on this one, I'm being a little bit more pragmatic. You know, I'm sort of, let's see how the universe speaks back to you. And if the universe brings you things, because it usually does, I haven't always paid attention to it. Look, I have an infinite amount of projects I can jump into. You know, every other day I'm being sent a script. I'm a very, very fortunate guy. But also with movies, specifically with movies, sometimes you don't pick the movie picks you, you know, and it's sort of like two asteroids colliding. And I want to see if the asteroids collide. And if they don't, well, then I know there's something else I can do. I'm in a fortunate position where I don't have to take everything that's offered.
That's your experience. That's your position as Elliot Lester. I know I keep saying your name over and over again. As the director, you're very well seasoned. You're very selective on what projects you decide to take now at this time and space of your life here. And I don't want to give too much of a reading away when it comes to you, but I have nothing but positive things to say about your trajectory and your future and things that are coming into play. You're at a different season, a different cycle of your life here. Again, not to bash the age, you're older, you're wiser. You've been through a lot. Things are different this time around. And just watching you work again, I know you guys are going to think I'm licking his ass, but this is the absolute truth. He is so inspiring and motivational. And I get a taste of what my clients get from me when they tell me, Chris, I need my fucking ass kicked during the session. I need you to give it to me straight up. You are one of the very few people that I've met in this lifetime that I wouldn't say I allow to speak to me that way, because with somebody like you, you don't allow Elliot. He's going to do what he's going to do. But I respect who you are as a person and the things that come out of your mouth, because when you're listening to you, I think that where we're very similar is the passion in our voices. And you're just, I mean, I just would love to be on set one of these days with you while you're directing and seeing you doing what you do naturally. I've heard you on the phone, but to see you in action, I mean, it has to be such an amazing feeling. And also too, knowing where you're at in this time and space of your life after everything that you've gone through. I mean, I think this is, to say this is the other side of life for you. No, I just think this is a very good time for you not to get back on the horse, but to reap in the rewards, remind yourself of your identity and where you're at in 2024. I mean, I have nothing but great things to share with you when it comes to the foreseeable future for you.
That's an amazing thing to hear. And that's very nice to say. I will say that, you know, again, you're sort of the summary of all of it, you know, all the failures. And of course I've had failures, you know, you jump into things thinking that they're going to work, and sometimes they simply do not. You can have all the right ingredients, you know, but sometimes it just doesn't work. And you know, what's the most important thing, and I would say this, is to not look back, not to try and play the what if game. Not try and sort of indulge in, like, what if I had course corrected or I had done this, or like rehearsing what you would have said or how you would have said it, because that moment is gone, that time is gone. It's about movement, energy.
That is the 100% truth. Just on a side note too, when people come to me for readings and they've said, oh, I've had a reading with a psychic before and we talked about past life regressions and, you know, what I was like in my past life, I said, that's great and that's beautiful, but how does that benefit you in this lifetime? You can't clear that karma. You can't go back and change that past life energy. You got to be very present moving forward. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's the takeaway from this here, is that I'm not Elliot Lester 35 years ago. I'm Elliot Lester 2024 and looking forward to my future.
Well, there's always that thing where people say, what would you have said to your younger self? What advice would you have? Well, I wouldn't have given myself any advice. I would have said, carry on, keep making mistakes. Just keep making mistakes, you know? There are people that are going to love you in this world, and you have to treat that with the same respect. You can't run from criticism, and you cannot only hear praise.
That is the truth. I want to veer off one more time to the other side of the road here. I was visiting you and Brooke in New York, we had dinners almost every night out. And by chance, I wish Brooke was here, every restaurant that we went to during that time frame all played 80s music, hip hop. Brooke and I, remember? It was Biggie. It was all like these hip hop artists. And me and Brooke were dancing in our seats. We were like, we didn't pick the best restaurants to eat at, but we picked the best restaurants that had the best soundtracks that were being played. And I remember sitting with you one-on-one. We just had that one day because you were so busy. I don't want to take up your time, but we had a beautiful 3-hour long conversation at your little island in your kitchen there. And I was asking you, because we were talking about music, and you've worked with some of the biggest names, from Jay-Z to Beyonce to Maya.
Maya, that's a random one.
Maya. I mean, the reason why is because we were talking about, you did the Best of Me video with Jadakiss. Yeah. And I said, my version of Best of Me is the one that Jay-Z did with Maya. He remixed that whole thing for her. And I've had the pleasure of reading Maya and meeting her in person. She's a beautiful woman. Very, very, now the word we're putting out there is,
stunning. I mean, she is.
Does she fucking age? Does she age?
I mean, I haven't seen her recently, but I will say she was very demure.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say the word we're looking for now is demure.
Just to speak to Jay-Z, mm-hmm. since you brought him up, Jay-Z was a remarkable guy. He, unlike a lot of his contemporaries, wasn't stoned, wasn't drunk, didn't mess around with the girls, it was all business, very clear, very mm-hmm. self-possessed. And, you know, some people have an mm-hmm. energy around them. They have this sort of aura. He had one of the strongest auras I'd seen. And I think he had this innate zen about him, which I really appreciate. And then the results speak for themselves. You know, you can't just become that successful by being a prick. You can also become successful by being forthright and good. And I found that.
He always carried himself. I mean, since his debut back in the early 90s, coming out and doing Reasonable Doubt, he always had the thugs around him, and he had that type of mentality, but you never saw him act out on that in that way. I want to throw one other person in there, because she gets a lot of shit for her antics from behind the scenes, and you had nothing but positive things to say about her, Jennifer Lopez.
I met Jennifer mm-hmm. several times. I knew that this was a remarkable person. Now, look, just because you're remarkable doesn't mean you're nice, right? But there was nothing in her that you could look at and go, well, this isn't false, this isn't genuine. I saw her at the beginning of her career. I saw her when she linked up with Puffy several times. I was with them the night before the shooting in that nightclub. I was with them on a tribute video to Big Pun, and then subsequently saw her again. And then what I noticed was her ambition and her focus had become far more acute. I mean, she was ambitious to start with, but as she was moving through her career, you could just feel the focus. It's kind of remarkable. You know, the way she would say hello at the beginning when I first met her was very different from the way she would say hello when I subsequently saw her later. She had time to say hello at the beginning. And later on, it's just much more curt because there's a million things going around.
Now, you know, we talked about it. I'm a huge Notorious B.I.G. Biggie fan, even bigger fan of Lil' Kim.
I never worked with her. I never worked with her, but she's an icon. It's undeniable. She definitely has a massive place in hip hop history, but our paths never crossed. I was definitely across like very big, like female rappers like Missy Elliott and Debrat and people like that. I mean, you're talking a long, long time ago, you know, and I would work with Debrat and, you know, Faith Evans. Faith Hill I worked with on the countryside, and I worked with Celine Dion. I found her truly remarkable. I got called to do a music video in Las Vegas, which is where she was living. And Renee, her husband, was alive at that time. And there, you know, she's one of like 12 kids. There was a true effervescence about her. You know, I think she really loved being a singer. I think she really enjoyed being Celine Dion. And, you know, much like yourself, she had this thing where she had this wonderful humanistic quality. There was no sense that anyone was beneath her. And I really enjoyed that aspect of her. You know, I worked also with Stevie Nicks from Fleetwood Mac, who, you know, was great to work with, highly complicated person. You know, highly complicated because that career had been super complicated. But also with me, very confessional, you know, very sort of trusting, wanted to be heard, had opinions, good opinions. She knew herself really well. I just, you know, my career has been a series of privileges. You know, I've worked with Elton John. I've worked with, like, Bon Jovi, like, all different types of people, you know. But there is a certain people... They have a certain frequency. You know, we all are different. You know, some people are low frequencies. These are really high frequency people. Now, high frequency people, they have anxiety. You know, you feel their anxiety. They don't feel they've arrived. There's never an arrival point. You know, you can be as successful as Jay-Z is, you know, billionaire, multi-platinum winning Grammy artist or whatever, but there's still no arrival point. I will say, most people are really very nice. Most people are really great.
To say it one more time, you're an amazing person, amazing soul, very, again, very inspiring. I wish nothing but the best for you and Brooke moving forward. I cannot wait to see you guys in person when you guys are back. I know you have a lot of traveling, all these great things that are going on. You're leaving the country, what, 3 or 4 times before the year's over?
I mean, Paris, Deauville, London, Canada, you know, I mean, again, look, you can't complain in life when, you know, wonderful things are happening to you. But look, you know, Chris, it's been really wonderful to talk to you. I really am grateful that you invited me onto your show. And I can't wait to see you next
week. Can't wait to see you.
You know, maybe you'll walk the red carpet with us.
Oh my God, I would die. We have to make that happen. Elliot, I cannot thank you enough for being on the show today. You have no idea how much this means to me. I really appreciate your time and you just being you. Thank you so much and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Chris. Bye.